Behold, I bring you lemons.
One of those looks like a monster lemon. The one with the leaves on it. Mm-hmm. It's the size of a sophomore.
All different sizes and shades. All an appealing yellow, like sunshine. They call to you. They smell good. What?
Some lemon tree you have there. Very pretty.
Are they Myers?
They're Myers.
Those are the best.
They are.
But they're sour. Almost bitter. Sour like suffering. Even the hungry, thieving critters in my backyard at night won't eat more than that first nibble. But these lemons can be used to make delightful beverages, desserts, and to enhance a lot of meals. You just need to know how to use them. In the same spirit of generosity and hope for your well-being, I bring you the hindrances. Wow. Aside from their name, which even sounds annoying, they are beguiling. They seduce us in a heartbeat, over and over. And breaking free can take forever. But they too, like lemons, can be used. If you know their nature and how to use them, you can free yourself from these obstacles in disguise and from all their sour aspects. So this talk is called Using the Hindrances. In a talk called the Avarana Sutta, the Buddha began by saying, "Monks!" Really, he said it with an exclamation point. It's in the sutta. It's not common for the big guy to use an exclamation point. So he really meant to wake those monks up. He wanted them to hear what he said. And after that, he declared that there are five obstacles that, quote, overwhelm awareness and weaken discernment, end quote. Then the Buddha demanded, which five? Give yourself that little quiz. The answer is desire, aversion, restlessness, sloth and torpor, just that's one. And finally, doubt. These hindrances warp the mind. They distract it, cloud it, confuse it, entangle the mind. I can remember when I was a youngster, a preteen, and I got my first crush on someone. I couldn't stop thinking about them. I played out imaginary scenarios in class, on the bus, and at the dinner table. Fortunately, silently. And with that much bandwidth devoted to desire, how was I going to absorb my school lessons or the social games on the school bus or really hear what my family experienced that day. In the Ahara Sutta, Buddha asked his Sangha, what feeds sensual desire, dislike, spaciness, restlessness, and uncertainty? He answered that it's inappropriate attention that snares us on our path. And it causes these states of mind to keep growing once they've arisen. That was certainly true for my preteen crush. My mind had gone off into delusions that had a short-lived but pleasant feeling, keeping me hooked. And as a result, I abandoned control of my attention and was just barely in this world. I was a mess. It wasn't until many years later I found this practice that I could bring this form of insanity in my life under control. All of the hindrances bog us down in pretty much the same way. In the Sangharava Sutta, a Brahmin asked why he was having trouble understanding things, teachings that he had read over and over. Actually, he hadn't read them, they had been memorized. So he had gone over them time and again. And Buddha explained that this student was hindered by one or more of these five states of mind. Being under the sway of any of them, the Buddha explained, is to, quote, dwell with your heart possessed and your mind overwhelmed. And I like this double function here. The heart feels that it's going after something good, and then it distorts the mind, overwhelms us. It's as if even our senses are distorted, and our feelings are corrupted, and our minds are confused by these five hindrances. Buddha went on to say that in this condition, we cannot know or see as it really is what is to our own profit, to the profit of others, or to both ourselves and others. Then, he said, even sacred words, long studied, are not clear, not to mention those not studied. End quote. During an interview at another sangha, a student told me how her husband had betrayed her. Her emotions were ferocious. Almost every kind of aversion was present in her mind and heart. Grief, disgust, and lots of anger. I kept suggesting ways for her to practice, to use metta or tonglen or walking meditation, or consider some basic teachings. But it was as if her ears weren't working. She couldn't stop talking about what had happened and literally could not hear the Dharma or practice that I was offering. Also, as you can probably imagine, she was in no shape to find a course of action that would reduce her suffering or that of anyone else. And certainly there were other people involved in this situation who were suffering. It's interesting to note that this phrase about not being able to see realistically what's in our own benefit or others, it's almost identical in several different suttas. In the Avarana Sutta, the one with the exclamation point to wake up the nun, the monks, Buddha compared a mind free of hindrances to a river that had no channels cut into it that would divert its water and diminish it. Without any such channels, like the distractions of the hindrances, the mind would be, he said, undispersed, undiffused, and undissipated. It would go far, its current swift, carrying everything with it. Our minds just get messed up by desire, aversion, sloth, restlessness, and uncertainty. And it takes some time and effort to clean up the mess, untangle the distortions. But we can do this. Without the hindrances, the mind is clear, powerful, and able to know the truth of the moment and the wisest way to go forward. When we are snagged by desire or aversion, or drowsiness or restlessness or doubt, there is a way to use those states of mind to do something very much like making lemonade. How? The answer lies in understanding what amounts to inappropriate attention that creates and feeds these hindrances. What can render attention inappropriate? The Ahara Sutta lays out some good answers for us. It says that focusing attention on beauty, on the appeal of some sense object, will lead to desire and then make desire keep increasing. Aversion is fed by focusing on some truth we're resisting, like that woman whose husband had acted so badly. Mental fogginess is fed when we let attention rest on our boredom, or weariness, or our drowsiness, or just let the attention drift away. Restlessness is fed by allowing our attention to jump around without control, or our bodies to physically fidget. Finally, uncertainty comes when we perceive things and events as undercutting our goals. She did this, or they did that, and therefore I probably can't. And that doubt grows when we keep telling ourselves that story about futility. In sum, we are hindered when we allow our attention to linger on such counterproductive thoughts. there's an apparently shorter answer to what constitutes inappropriate attention and how to make lemonade out of it in the Nivarana Sutta. The sutta is shorter, though, only because it refers the reader to the four foundations of mindfulness. These are set out in a very large sutta, which is the pillar of insight meditation, the Satipatthana Sutta. This great teaching instructs us how to pay attention to the body, to our feelings of liking, disliking, or neutrality, to our broader state of mind, and to the Dharma. And I'm just brushing over them because no way do I have the time tonight to explain what each of those are, but you probably understand what the body is and the fact that we like or don't like things, and we feel that. So as it teaches us this, the Satipatthana Sutta repeats extremely often how we should focus our attention on these objects. We should, quote, remain focused on the body, for instance, in and of itself, ardent, alert, and mindful, putting aside greed and distress with reference to the world. I can't tell you how many hours I spent parsing that phrase, which I read over and over, but I'll try to paraphrase it. We should focus attention like a laser beam right on our body so we can see our feelings, our mind states, and how we like or don't like things just as they arise in our awareness, untainted by other thoughts or mind states. This is appropriate attention. It requires practice and determination to develop, but it's completely within our ability to do that. This is not just appropriate attention. This is wisdom. The day-to-day way to improve the quality of life on this earth. To use a saying common in AA, we need to get out of the problem and into the solution. Or as I have often said in here, get out of the story and into the body to understand the way we feel and why, so we can clear away what obscures our judgment and act to the benefit of all beings. So really, in practical terms, how do we use the hindrances to our benefit? First, we have to recognize them. For example, planning. This is common. People sit, relax, focus, and the next thing they know, they're going over their to-do list repeatedly. Gil Fronsdale says we should ask, what would I be feeling if I weren't thinking about this? It's a good way to interrupt your daily planner. Ask yourself that question. Then watch the breath or the places where you usually feel emotion, and the answer might just come to you. For most people, the answer is that they're worried about something. When they make this effort to see beyond their compulsive planning, this insight into their aversion, their worry, often blossoms in their mind without the emotional power that has kept them from seeing how to deal with their situation. It's just simple self-distraction. And once we see it and feel what it is we're trying not to experience, it becomes manageable. What we need in our understanding to deal with that situation will come with that insight. Maybe not instantly, but by and by. And I asked the same question with sloth and torpor. What would I be feeling if I weren't so spacey? And doubt. If you feel adrift and conflicted, doubt usually masquerades this way. Try to recall your intention and whatever you're doing and feel that motivation. Look at the reasons that made you set that intention and bring yourself back to the moment that you made that decision. All of these investigations set up the conditions for and invite insight to arise. It might arise, or maybe not. At any rate, you will be present instead of allowing your attention to be just stuck in the hindrances. Before I get to the conclusion of this, let me clarify that there are two approaches to the hindrances. I have set out the approach that actually uses them to confront and often reduce the power of these mental tendencies that we all have that will snag us and hold us back. The other more short-term approach is called the antidotes. There are other terms for it, but I think that's the most common. And these antidotes are helpful if you're so overwhelmed by the hindrance that you just can't focus at all. I don't have time right now to review the antidotes, but let me point you to a list that I created for a day-long on concentration, where your goal is simply to get focused and not to reduce the power of the hindrance in the long run. So you can get a list of these antidotes by going onto the Sangha's website. And up at the top right, there's a little search engine. You can type something in there and type in the word antidote. And up will pop a number of things, one of which is the PDF called Concentration Outline. And just go to the second page, and there's that list of simple, kind of common sense steps to pull the mind free, at least momentarily. But it's important to recognize that if a hindrance is reducing the quality of your life, just applying an antidote isn't a cure. To conquer this mental habit, you need to examine it in the way that the Satipatthana Sutta instructs. Focus on it in and of itself, ardent, alert, and mindful, putting aside greed and distress with reference to the world. Investigate how thoughts arise about your desire, aversion, restlessness, spaciness, or uncertainty. Feel the body's response. And don't take this personally. It's just a hindrance. It's a tendency we all have. But it is not part of your deepest nature. You can overcome the hindrances. You can use them to make lemonade. Focus your attention. Use it to your own profit, to the profit of others, and to the profit of both yourself and others. Thank you, and please help yourself to the lemons.